Edius, Perk Vav, Mishnah Aleph 6:1. And now we have testimony from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. He was a Tana that lived basically in the, he stretched from the end of the Chorban Habayis all the way until the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba vault where he was martyred. He was a student of Shmuel HaKatan, apparently an especially big tzaddik. He was actually referred to as a chassid, and the Gemara actually says in Bava Kama, whenever he told stories about there's a certain chassid, it's referring to either Rabbi Yehuda bar Eli or Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So he was an extraordinary person. And here we have him testifying about these five things. The first is, she mema'anim esektanos. We encourage katanos, particularly two cases of minors, to do miun. So I'll remind you what this is all about. Midoraisa, a woman can get married in one of two ways. Either she can accept kedushin or her father can do it on her behalf. If we have a situation in which the woman is the girl is an orphan, so she has no father, so then she can't be married off by her because she's a minor and neither her father because he's not around. The rabbis instituted for the benefit of the girl to avoid being abused by the public that she could be married off by her mother or by her older brother, meaning a bar mitzvah age brother, who would accept kedushin on her behalf, making her rabbinically married, if you will, the hope being that the husband now would protect the girl from minig of keros, that she shouldn't, you know, be abused by the public. So, taken advantage of. So, there are two cases where, so now, to undo that marriage, the rabbis made it as easy as possible. Basically, she just has to say she wants to reject this husband, she doesn't want him anymore. That's called miun. And if she does that, it basically means retroactively she was never married. In other words, the whole institution of this rabbinic marriage is to protect the girl. If it's not good for her, we'll let her get out of it without any repercussions. So a girl does miun, doesn't get a ksuba, but she also just as if she was never married, meaning she could even marry a kohen after that. So normally we don't want to encourage miun because we want girls to stay married and be protected, but there are two specific cases here that according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, we do encourage them to do miun. Both are kind of complicated. Sugas from Yevamos in the 13th parak. I'll try to do them kind of quickly, and we'll try to optimize speed and, you know, concision here because it's complex. So the first case is you have two brothers who married two sisters. Reuven and Shimon, the brothers, married the two sisters, Rachel and Leah. Rachel is married to Reuven in a regular conventional marriage. Leah is married to Shimon in a rabbinic marriage, through the kind of marriage which could be undone by miun. So now, that means on a Daraisa level, there's only one marriage here, okay? Now, if Reuven dies, so and he has no living children, so then Rachel now falls to Shimon for Yibum or Chalitza. The problem is, Shimon's already married rabbinically to Rachel's sister Leah. And therefore, there's a restriction, right? Shimon can't do Yibum, can't marry Rachel because of Achos Ishto. It's his wife's sister. Okay? But if then Shimon goes and gives Chalitza to Rachel, so then now Leah is essentially Achos Chalutza. So she's the sister of his kind of quasi-rabbinic divorcee, the Chalitza woman, and therefore he can't stay married to her either. So now that would mean that Shimon can't marry Rachel or Leah, his divorced Leah, Rachel and Leah are single, and that's all a sad story. And therefore, the advice that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava said, really based on there's a machlokas in the back in Yevamos, and he's going like the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, that we teach the girl the katana to do miyun, because the point is that Leah is going to get divorced one or the other. She's not going to be able to stay married to Shimon. But if she does miyun, then she essentially retroactively was never married to Shimon. She's out the picture, and therefore at least Shimon could marry her sister Rachel, and they could build up the Reuven's home, and they could live happily ever after. So since Leah, regardless, is going to be unmarried shortly, we encourage her to do miyun so at least Rachel and Shimon can get on with things and have a normal life. That's the first case that we encourage the girl to do miyun. The second case is where we have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, who are married. So, and Reuven is married to two women, not sisters. Okay, Reuven has two wives. One's a gadola, one's a katana. We'll just call them gadola and katana. The gadola is, she's married on the Daraisa level. The katana, he's married only on a rabbinic level, right? So now, if Reuven dies, so now, really, on a rabbinic level, it seems that both wives are now falling to Yibum, and you can do Yibum or Chalitza with one or the other. The problem is that if Shimon would do Yibum or Chalitza with the Katana, that doesn't solve the Daraisa issue of needing for the Gadol to still need Yibum or Chalitza as well. Yibum would not be an option. But if what Shimon does is first he sleeps with the katana, making them like married on a rabbinic level, if you will, and then now he's supposed to now not marry the other sister-in-law, if you will, the other widow, but she still needs Yibum or Chalitza, and Derais, if he sleeps with her, that is Yibum. So if he does sleep with her, now he slept with both the katana and Gedola. So now, on a Derais level, he has just one wife. On a rabbinic level, he has these, like the two wives that are not compatible, because you can't marry your sister-in-law unless for Yibum, and there's not happening if there's two of them, and therefore, he would be forced to get rid of both of them. But if the specific situation, which first he slept with the younger, and then he slept with the older, so if the younger now does Miyun, which is kind of an unusual case of Miyun, where we're doing Miyun to undo a Yibum, because her actual husband, Reuven's dead, but Miyun would work by undoing a Yibum situation as well. If the Katana does Miyun with her, I'll call it husband, Shimon, what happens is, it's like they were never married, and therefore there's no relationship whatsoever between Shimon and the Katana, and therefore there's no problem with Shimon staying married to the Gedola, because she needed Yibum, and he did Yibum with her, and that will be like Yibum happily ever after. Therefore we encourage the Katana to do Miyun, because the alternative is he can't stay married to either of them, meaning regardless how it shakes out again, the Katana is not going to be staying married, and therefore we teach her to do a Miyun at least, and then everyone else can get on with their lives, including her. Okay, those are two cases that we're talking about, the first of the five. The second of the five is that Shemesian Esa Isha al pi Eirechad, which is also so again the Yivamos here, which is that a woman can get remarried based on the testimony of one witness saying her husband died. This is highly irregular. Usually for davar shiva erva, meaning a marriage or divorce, you need to have two kosher witnesses, but the rabbis are super lenient to limit the possibility of a gunos, woman being stuck. And in a situation in which a woman's husband was overseas and he died, we rely on the testimony of even one person, even a woman, even aid, to testify that the husband's dead, allowing the, now we'll call it the widow, to remarry somebody else. Because without that confirmation he's dead, she'll be considered Eish HaSesh forever, and she's stuck as an aguna, never being able to get married. So we accept testimony of even one person here. Now, why would the rabbis be so lenient to accept one person's testimony when usually you need to have two kosher witnesses? Here's one, even not a kosher witness. It could be an Eved, could be an Isha, could be Ish Mepi Isha even. So the answer is really twofold. Okay, and this is also a complicated sugi over there, but the short of it is, number one, there's an assumption that people wouldn't lie about something which is going to come out later on, the truth of it. So in the case here, if the husband really isn't dead, he'll show up sooner or later coming looking for his wife, and therefore the truth will come out. So we have reason to believe the truth that the husband is indeed dead. And second of all, the rabbis put like super severe penalties, kenosos, on a woman who marries under the scenario, like illegally, I'll call it, if she's already married to a second person, in terms of mamzerus and losing a ksuba and all the rest of it. And therefore, the thought is that will ensure that the woman, the wife, the widow, we'll call her, is extremely careful to ensure that it's true that her husband is dead before she remarries, because she's afraid of the consequences. Okay, that's the second. The third is he testified, Sheniskal Tarnagol B'Yerushalayim, that a certain chicken in Jerusalem was stoned to death, Al Shaharag Esanefesh, for the reason that it killed a person, meaning this rooster or whatever he is, the chicken, pecked on the head of the fontanelle, the soft spot on a baby's head, killing the baby, and their punishment to the rooster was a formal trial and stoning, executing the rooster. This is based on the pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'chi yigach shor es isha v'meis." Should an ox gore a man or woman, and the human being die, sakol yisakel hashor, then the ox has to be stoned to death. So you would have thought it's just oxen, but not applying to other animals. No, it applies to any animal or bird, even a chicken. And it actually happened once. The fourth thing he testified about was Va'al Hayayin bin Arba'im Yom Shenisna Sech Al Gav Mizbeach, that it's permitted L'Chadchila to use 40-day-old wine for the Nesachim in the Beis HaMikdash. So the backstory here is that whenever a person brings a Zevach, an animal offering of the variety either of an Ola or a Shlamim, so then the offering must be accompanied by Nesachim, which means also there's a wine libation, okay? So now, L'chachil, you're supposed to use only wine, meaning something which is potentially intoxicating. The idea is because the pasuk says, B'kodesh hasech nesech sheicher l'shem. You will hasech nesech, you'll offer a libation of shechar, something which is intoxicating. Question is, how long after the pressing does grape juice have to sit in order to become wine? So he's saying here from 40 days, meaning bidi eved, if you use even grape juice, you'd be yotzi. But l'charchila, you have to do something which is intoxicating. And he's saying l'charchila, once it's 40 days old, you could use it l'charchila, no problem. That's the threshold. The final case of the Mishnah is talking about, it says, v'al tamid shal shachar shekarav ba'ar b'shaos, that the daily morning, daily offering, tamid shal shachar, was offered 4 hours into the day. So the case here is, you have, actually it's historical events. What happened was, back in 65 BCE, there were these two brothers, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, no good nicks. They were the sons of Shlomtzion HaMalka and Yanai HaMelech, Alexander Janaeus. Yanai was a bad guy, Shlomtzion HaMalka was a great woman. In all events, when she had two sons who were fighting over who would be the next king of Israel, essentially. This is the last of the Hasmonean period. Hyrcanus put a siege around Aristobulus inside Jerusalem to conquer Jerusalem. Even so that they were sort of fighting, still Hyrcanus' side would send every day two new sheep over the wall so they could be offered as korbanos. One time, instead of putting sheep, they put goats. Goats are not eligible for Tamidin. Therefore, they had to sort of scurry around looking for sheep. They had a bit of a nace, and they found two sheep in Yerushalayim there in the temple precinct, but it took some time. And by the time they ended up offering the Tamid Shel Shachar, it wasn't the ideal time, which is really before Netzachama, when, you know, during dawn, during Alosa Shachar time, between, you know, first light and Netz, before sunrise. But Bidiyavid, you can go to the fourth hour, and that's what's being testified over here. That's what they did. There is a machlokas in Brachos, if it's to the fourth hour or till Chatzos, till midday. Many learn that this is Rehudu ben Bava passing like Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that it's just till 4 hours in the day. And there's enough community here, of course, for all of us, which is when we daven Shachris, it's keneged, it's like in parallels the curb, this Tamid Shel Shachar. And for that reason, even though ideally we would daven Shachris at Netzachama, that's the ideal time to do it, really you can daven Shachris until 4 hours into the day, roughly 10 a.m., depending on the time and place. But the point is, the basis of that is coming from this Mishnah over here.